My name is Ram Shankar, and I'm the FBR analyst. I cover BDCs and California banks. The first presentation of the afternoon will be American Capital. ACAS is based in Bethesda, Maryland. They provide senior sub-debt and equity capital to private and public companies. Their market cap is about $2.5 billion. With us here today are our founder and chairman, CEO Milan Vilcus, and director of investor relations, Pete Diodes. With that, I'll turn the floor over to Milan.
Thank you, Ram. Appreciate everybody joining us today. I'll try to quickly go through a presentation so that we can turn to questions. We are an $18 billion capital resource management company. $6 billion of that is on our balance sheet. $12 billion is funds that we manage externally. We were founded back in 86. We went public in 97. And we've invested $24 billion at American Capital since our IPO. And today we have $6 billion of assets, $3.3 billion of net worth, and we have a 0.8-to-1 debt-to-equity ratio. Since going public, we've paid out $30 of dividends when we went public at $15 a share. When you include our assets under management, we have invested $40 billion in 522 portfolio companies since our IPO. 120 of those were in one-stop buyouts, where we funded the senior debt, sub-debt, and equity. We syndicated the senior, we kept the sub-debt, and we even syndicated a portion of the equity over time. Today, we have over 230 portfolio companies that in the aggregate have $57 billion of revenues and $9 billion of EBITDA. We invest about $5 million to $100 million dollars in portfolio companies in the United States and 5 to 25 million euros in Europe. Our portfolio companies have about $150 million of weighted average revenues. They have $33 million of EBITDA on average, and a 22% EBITDA margin. Now, this is a middle market company, so a 22% EBITDA margin is really quite outstanding. They have, on average, 33 years of age, and our mean net debt, American Capital's mean net debt in these companies is about 4 to 1 debt to EBITDA. And the debt service coverage is about 2.1 in debt average interest coverage ratio. This is the coverage ratio that our portfolio companies have on their debt is 2.5 to 1. I'll give you a sense of some of the companies. SMG is the world's largest manager of municipal facilities for theater or arenas and things of that sort, concert halls. They're really in an industry where the second largest player is quite small relative to them, and they operate worldwide. Rydell Helmets, you know them. We had a nice debt investment, sub-debt investment in them, and an equity stake. Today we just have a small equity stake of about 3%. On the other hand, Amco Transmission we own 100% of. We've originally bought Cottman Transmission and then subsequently helped Cottman buy Amco, change its name entirely to Amco. WIS is the second largest of a duopoly of companies that do inventory counting for corporations around the world. Nivel is the leading distributor of parts for golf carts. And Rug Doctor, which we own a majority. Rug Doctor, we also own a majority of Rug Doctor. They're the leading firm to rent cleaners, rug cleaners, out of major department stores and other facilities. Give you some more. These are some of the companies we've exited: Evenflow, Europro, Bumblebee Tuna, Camelback, Gibson Guitar, Piper Aircraft. So we've been in a lot of companies, and we're highly diversified across industry sectors, tremendous diversification. And we have a very strong process for evaluating investment opportunities. We get investment opportunities from investment banks that are selling middle market companies, and also private equity firms that are looking, seeking financing for their purchase of middle market companies. And we throw away 80% of those within the first hour or days that we see them. Then the principals will evaluate it and throw half of those away. And then the investment committee will throw 20% of those away just in the initial phases of the effort. And then the due diligence begins in great earnest, and it can take weeks or months to get back to a closing. I should say it takes several months to 5 or 6 months to get back to a closing on our transactions. We have 33 principals and MDs that head up investment teams, and they evaluate the business management and operations of the company, and they sit on the boards of directors of these companies and interface with the CEOs and CFOs of the company. Plus, we have a 35-person fact team of CPAs who spend, three to four of them will spend a week or so at the company to evaluate the historical performance and prepare an independent investment committee report. So we have our investment teams preparing an investment committee report. We have our fact team independently developing their own report on the company. And we have an operations team that evaluates the potential of the company as well and independently reports to the investment committee. That's a 17-member person team. We have six ex-CEOs and presidents as part of that team and two ex-COOs. Plus, we have three supply chain specialists in that team. So this team is a group that can actually run companies if they get broken, and they spend a great deal of time with the portfolio companies to enhance their performance. So ultimately, these opportunities fall back to the investment committee. About three-quarters of them pass by the wayside in one reason or another, and we ultimately elect to invest in approximately less than 2% of the deal flow. Our financial performance of recent is that we've, in the third quarter, produced 17 cents in net operating income, which is an 80 or 90% improvement over the prior quarter. We produced 43 cents in net operating income, or I should say 43 cents in net earnings. That's $149 million of net earnings, and we've produced $617 million year to date. That's a 19% return on equity. And that brings our net asset value to $9.59. That's 44 cents or 5% increase over the prior quarter, bringing our NAV to $3.3 billion. In the third quarter, we paid down $407 million of debt, including about $200 million of our secured debt. Today, we are at the lowest pricing of our pricing grid on our secured debt, and we are at a 0.8-to-1 debt-to-equity ratio, or another way of saying it, a 230% asset coverage ratio. Now, since the low point of our book value at the end of the second quarter of 2009, we've increased our book value by $1.4 billion. We've repaid $1.8 billion of debt down, and we've produced a 27% return on equity. Now, today we've repaid $300 million of the new secured debt in the third and fourth quarters, so we've now dropped down to the lowest pricing that we have for the secured debt. Our goal is to delever to 0.6-to-1. And our future leverage ideally should be, in our view, on balance sheet securitizations, and we think we should be able to achieve that. At this point, we have no amortization requirements until 2013 when our debt is due, and so we have great flexibility of how we operate the business and how we and what we do with any liquidity that we get off of our portfolio. So we're back in the business of deploying capital. We are looking at investment opportunities in mezzanine. In today's market, you can get a 15 to 16% yield on mezzanine investments and at lower multiples, 1 to 2 multiples lower in multiples in mezzanine today than, say, in 2007. With respect to our dividends, we have no undistributed taxable income remaining for our 2009 tax year. With respect to 2010, we're expecting no distributable taxable income for the 2010 tax year. That was ended in the end of September. We haven't given guidance on whether we will have distributable taxable income in 2011, but we will see. We do have about $600 million of losses of capital and ordinary losses that we can roll into the future. And so there's going to be a time here where we're growing our book value without having the requirement of paying out that growth to our shareholders in the form of dividends. We have no restrictions on paying a dividend, not in our credit facility as we currently perform, nor under the 40 Act. So we could pay a dividend, but our view is that we should not pay a dividend unless we have a taxable income to do it with. You can see that our track record, our performance of appreciation in gains and or losses or depreciation on our portfolio tracks quite closely with the GDP, which is the blue line, and then the yellow shows our net appreciation and depreciation. And you can see it tracks quite closely with it. So as long as GDP is growing, we do believe we're going to generate some nice appreciation on our portfolio. To date, since we went public, we've had a 12% weighted average IRR on our senior debt, sub-debt, and equity investments. On the exits that we've had in those investments. We've had 306 exits or realizations totaling $15 billion of capital, 60% of all the capital that we've invested. And the proceeds exceeded the prior quarter's valuation by 1%, actually less than 1%, actually less than one-half of 1%. And then finally, I think we are proud to be able to say that we've had a 26% weighted average IRR on our equity realizations. So the equity investments that we've made in portfolio companies and the realizations on those have enjoyed a 26% IRR over the last 13 years. We're generating lots of liquidity off of our portfolio, $2.7 billion over the last 2 years. And you can see the last quarter alone, $305 million of liquidity. So we have a normal process of liquidity. Even of that $2.7 billion, even though we, as you know, we were in default of our credit facilities and we generated a lot of liquidity, we used a lot of that liquidity to pay down our creditors. And in fact, all of our creditors had the election of either staying in or getting out 100 cents on the dollar, and 45% chose to exit, and the other 55% are today our creditors, and they elected to stay in. So we're very proud of that. Of that $2.7 billion of liquidity, only somewhere between $350 to $400 million was exited at a time that was really a bit inopportune for the asset. We probably took about a 15% discount on those exits. Otherwise, the other $2.3 billion of these exits were just done in the normal course because it was the right time, the right opportunity to exit the company. Those exits, you can see how close they were to the prior quarter's valuation. They're virtually dead on when you average that out. There's been a lot of discussions about the possibility that we have exited only our good companies and kept only bad companies in the portfolio. So we've tried to show a set of statistics to clarify whether that was the case or not. Well, I can tell you that we took a lot of losses, and you can see this every quarter if you look at our Qs. You can see all the losses that we took. And we took losses every quarter while we were also getting exits that produced lots of proceeds and in some cases, gains. And we took those in the same proportion, really, that they existed in our portfolio. And therefore, we have not degraded the portfolio. And if you look at the proportion of assets that are in control companies. It was 55% when we started this process. It's 58% today, about the same. The fair value to cost basis was 64% when we started. It's improved a tad to 68%. The mean net debt to EBITDA in the portfolio companies reached a high of 4.6, and it's dropped down to 4.1. Those are all good things. Perhaps the best statistic here is the weighted average EBITDA margin, which has been just hovering around 21% and recently has gone up to 21.9%. Again, a good thing, all indicating that the portfolio, if anything, is improving. Now, we do have a little less senior debt than we used to. We have a little less sub-debt than we used to and more equity. And that equity is probably going to grow because if the economy cooperates, obviously the growth rate of equity is higher than the growth rate of debt. So overall, our assets have performed. Actually, our assets have performed better than most assets in many asset classes through this last recession. And on an average basis, a weighted average basis, the IRR on all of our investments is 6% since we went public 13 years ago. It's 12% for those assets that we've exited, and over the last 5 years, it's been 1% overall and 9% over the assets that we exited. This big negative number here is really inconsequential because it represents only about 5% of that static pool. So our assets have performed. The problem that we developed, of course, is that we came in default of our credit facility due to a tangible net worth requirement and the changes that were required under FASB in how we fair valued our assets. The value proposition that we present today, well, over the last 5 quarters, we've produced just shy of $800 million of appreciation in the portfolio. That's a 27% annualized return on equity. That's a $2.17 increase in our NAV, 29% increase. Well, so that's the past. The future, what's the future hold? Well, we believe there's potential appreciation, number one, in our investment in European capital. We own 100% of European capital. It has about $1.3 billion invested in Europe. Its NAV today is at $793 million, just shy of $800 million, and we currently have it valued at $500 million. The $300 million discount would go away if we just were to consolidate European capital on our balance sheet. Well, we can't consolidate it on our balance sheet because it's not a regulated investment company, but if we could, that discount would go away. Well, the discount, we believe, will also go away just over time as public company comps continue to improve their values relative to their book. Also, as we refinance out, we have a credit facility there that it's due at the end of next year. It's only 200 million euros in size. We've gotten a lot of liquidity at European Capital at very good values, and so we don't have much doubt about our ability to refinance that credit facility, but that's one of the risk factors that's taken into account in discounting the value from its NAV. In addition, we have $180 million of bond yield discount at European Capital on performing assets, and if we just hold those assets until we collect the debt, until the debt is repaid to us, then we'll pick up that 180, and at American Capital, we'll pick up 113 million as we collect these performing credit facilities or to our portfolio companies. Debt, particularly our kind of debt, sub-debt, gets repaid very quickly in good times, and the economy has been improving, so we're seeing a lot of that come back, and when it does, it's coming back to us at its face value. But more importantly, we have $1.6 billion of equity stakes in portfolio companies. Those equity stakes in today's world is designed or fair valued and are discounted at a 20 to 30% rates of return. So you can actually go through our portfolio tranche by tranche, because we tell you every piece and what tranche it is in the capital structure of the portfolio company, and you can determine pretty much what its forecasted growth rates should be. Well, for equity, it should be somewhere between 20 and 30% rates of return. For sub-debt, it's really 15 to 16% rates of return. And you can do the same thing with senior debt and so forth. So you can come up with your own view of the future forecast of our NAV, taking those growth rates into account, plus these bond yield discounts and the discount at European Capital. So that's our value proposition, and with that, I'm going to open it up for questions. Yes, sir. Well, when a loan goes on non-accrual, you can expect it to be dramatically depreciated, right? And usually that depreciation will happen very quickly around the period of time it goes on non-accrual. And so today we have about 6% of our assets at fair value on non-accrual. I'm not quite sure. It's about 22%, I believe.
No, it's about 18%.
18%.
Okay.
Thank you, Peter.
We
do a discounted cash flow analysis. We do a public company comparable analysis. We do a comparable transaction analysis. And we take into account any third-party bids for the portfolio companies. We have a team of 22 CPAs on staff that does this every quarter. I think we've been viewed as pioneers in the fair valuing of highly illiquid middle market companies. This team of people spend time not only in doing initial due diligence on the company, but they then take the responsibility every quarter to fair value the assets. They work very closely with our investment teams. We spend a huge amount of time on this every quarter. And as we've said, the proof is in the pudding, of course, and the exits are the best indicator of whether we're good at this or not. And over the last 2 years, you can see how the proceeds of our exits have compared to the prior quarter's fair value, and it's virtually dead on accurate. And over the last 14 years, we've exited $15 billion worth of capital, and we have been less than one-half of 1% higher than the prior quarter's valuation of those exits. So our balance, I believe this indicates that we do a good job of fair valuing our balance sheet. I'm not really quite sure how to answer that. I can tell you that we've had $795 million of net appreciation over the last five quarters, but that's across the entire portfolio. It's in part because of bond yield discounts have dissipated. It's in part because of equity has appreciated, equity stakes in portfolio companies. And then, in partly, that's due to EBITDA increasing at portfolio companies, and it's in part due to multiples expanding in portfolio companies.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Obviously, there are a lot of moving parts in the portfolio, but if you had to, you know, pinpoint when and where the portfolio could bottom out for you guys?
Well, it bottomed out 5 quarters ago, and so that 795 is accumulated appreciation since the bottom. So it's been five quarters now ago since we've hit the bottom in valuations. Yes, sir. Well, keep in mind, by law, we're limited to one-to-one debt to equity as a BDC, and what we've said is that we're targeting 0.6-to-1. We should be able to get there quickly if the economy cooperates and we get the kind of appreciation that I'm kind of describing for the various assets that we have on our books. That 0.6 equates closely to, in almost identical to what other BDCs had who went through the recession without defaulting. And so the more accurate way to look at this is if you take a look at some of the BDCs that did go through the recession, they did not default, how much was their debt levered, their debt assets levered? And we want to be no more than that. And certainly we also want a facility that doesn't have, that either doesn't have a tangible net worth covenant in it or one that doesn't include the equity in the calculation. So if our credit facilities didn't include our equity stakes, keep in mind they were being serviced by our debt assets and the income off of the debt assets. If it didn't include the equity stakes in the calculation of tangible net worth, we would have never broke covenant. But they did, and of course, FASB changed the rules on us in the middle of the game. But that's all behind us. But for the future, the best way for us to lever is through securitizations. We've done a dozen securitizations. They've all performed well. They don't have the tangible net worth kind of covenant. They don't have covenants in it. They just trap cash and match. They're match funded against the assets and the liabilities. If the asset is paid down, then the liability is paid down. We believe we could do this. There's, the securitization market is not open today to the most part, but we do believe we could be one of the first kinds of firms to be able to securitize because we don't need much advance rate against our assets. We only need 40% advance rates, being that we're a BDC that can lever no more than one-to-one debt to equity. Yes, sir.
Two quick questions, if you can.
Yeah.
One, you previously mentioned there's always going to be some sort of liquidity discount compared to the European comps, these spreads that help.
Mm-hmm.
And so what exactly would that discount be in terms of percentage?
I don't know the answer to that. I can't tell you what that discount was last quarter, but liquidity, control premium discounts tend to be 20 to 30%. You can look it up. It's an Ebitson discount. We use a public, we take the public data, or the data that's provided by a variety of agencies out there, and we use their discounts. Now, keep in mind, at American Capital, our credit facility is not due till 2013, and there's no amortization requirement. And you're speaking about European Capital, whose credit facility is of $200 million that's now outstanding, is due at the end of next year. We've already paid several hundred million of that down, just from liquidity off of the ECAS portfolio. And so you can imagine that, on the one hand, we're working on refinancing it. We're looking at the credit markets all the time. But even if we couldn't refinance it, I'm confident that our liquidity through our portfolios could repay that debt.
But no other liquidity.
Yeah. Yes, sir. Yeah.
Two questions. One, what was the most successful investment in the last couple of years? And secondly, what are your plans to expand your business in the asset management manager of REITs?
Well, you know, we have built one of the largest agency REITs. I think it's the second largest agency REIT. We did that by taking funding and incubating an agency REIT 2 years ago, and then we took it public just about 3 years ago, and then we took it public about 2 years ago. That's called American Capital Agency. We had invested $100 million in it, and that was an outstanding return for us. We probably got about a 35% return on that $100 million. We've just recently completely exited that investment. We still manage American Capital Agency on a management fee structure basis, and today it's a $11 billion agency REIT. That's probably not our best IRR. Can you think of one, the best one? Yeah, I think one of our energy investments that we exited a couple of years ago had probably in excess of 50-60% IRRs. One of our oldest investments was Piker Aircraft. It was our second oldest investment in our portfolio, and we exited that about a year and a half ago. Maybe a little more than that, 2 years ago, and got an outstanding return on it. And that was a company where we had originally been a lender to it. It got into trouble. We became the equity investor. We even bought back some of the debt at a discount. We really worked that company. Our operations team spent a huge amount of time working on the company to help it perform, this team of people. And ultimately, we exited it, I think, with in excess of 40% IRRs on it. After that was about a 12-year investment.
So you had a 35% return on your cash investment without assigning any value on the asset manager. Did you assign any value in your portfolio?
Yes. Our asset management company is a portfolio company, and we do fair value that every quarter. And so when your American Capital Agency accumulates more assets to manage, and they've been issuing equity most quarters, so they've been getting bigger and bigger, well, our management fee grows, and therefore the value of American Capital, the management company, also grows.
And can you disclose where the value of the asset manager?
It's shown. Other questions? Did you have a question?
Yeah. Any updates that you can give on Orchard Brands?
Orchard Brands is one of a troubled loan that we have in the portfolio, and so we've depreciated that loan quite substantially. It's various tranches of credit that we've advanced to that company, so various tranches have been depreciated. The company is going through. The company certainly has some good aspects to it, but it can't support its current capital structure, and so we're in deep involvement in the negotiations around its recapitalization and restructuring, and that's really all I can say about it. Yes, sir.
What are you seeing overall in early stage delinquency trends in the portfolio?
Early stage what?
The 30 to 59 day delinquency trends in your loan portfolio, what are the trends?
It's really been fairly constant for quite some time.
Stable, not getting better, not getting worse.
I don't think we have that in this deck. Do we? I don't think it's in this deck. No. But it's been quite stable in terms of the past due. I think you're talking about past dues now.
Well, even something it starts to become delinquent.
Yeah,
30 days past due.
That's right, past dues. So we report that every quarter. We show it by 30 days, 60 days, 120 days, yeah. Anything over 120 days. It's been pretty stable. We did have actually this this one credit that Ram just asked about was delinquent by one day, I think on $100 million, and was paid on the second day. So.
Okay. And then, I'm sorry, I just wanted to go back to one question. I apologize if I'm confused, but I'm trying to understand. So the total non-accruals at cost increased last quarter, but total non-accruals at fair value decreased last quarter. Is that because...
We just appreciated the assets more,
okay,
right? I mean,
you appreciated assets that are not accruing, or the fair value assessment of the entire portfolio?
No, that was... So the
non-accrual assets?
Yeah.
You increased... Okay, so the value of non-accruing assets increased?
No, they depreciated, right? Okay, the statistic you're referring to is the amount of assets at fair value and at cost to total debt assets.
Okay.
And at fair value, it did come down a little bit, not much, but a little bit. And that's because we depreciated those assets greater. Our total assets of debt assets actually declined. And so when you look at the numbers, there was a decline in the fair value of the non-accruing debt assets.
The value of the management company at the end of the third quarter was $87
million. Okay. And I think we have those non-accruing debt assets valued at around 7% or something. I don't quite remember the exact number, around 7%. And that's been the case for years, frankly. And our collection rate is easily at that level or higher, you know, the ultimate collection on those. Okay? Other questions? So I think the proposition that we're making is that American Capital for many, many years paid out all of our income as dividends. And that was something that as a BDC people liked, a retail investor liked. We're not in a position to do that today. We don't have the taxable income to be able to do that. And so instead, we're growing our book value in a very substantial way. And you can see that over the last five quarters, it's grown at a 27% rate of return. Well, you can just run the numbers yourself against the various asset classes that we have on our balance sheet. They're fair valued, and so you can just basically say, well, what is equity rates of return in the marketplace for the middle market today? Well, I can tell you they're somewhere between 20 and 30% rates of return. You can pick a number in between there if you like, or below that if you like, but you can apply it to a $1.6 billion of equity stakes, and you see you can get some very substantial future values. And that would grow our NAV. And you can do that to our MEZ, our senior debt, our second lien debt, and so forth, and you can get your own forecast of the future value of our net asset value. Plus, we have these other discounts that has to do with bond yield discount, and then we have the discount associated with European capital. All of those, we think, will over time go away if the economy cooperates. So, in a sense, we've been a levered play on the economy for some time. And if the economy continues to improve, then I think you'll see improvement at American Capital as well. Other questions? Thank you very much. Very much appreciated. Go ahead.